Welcome back to the Smuggler's Den, episode 15, brought to you by Game Empire Pasadena, a great place to come and play games, and a great place to order your product from at GameEmpirePasadena.com. I'm your host, Tiny Grimes, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host,
Ben Tully. I go by Scarlet Knight on the boards. Make sure you check out us on our various interactive points with the community and the fans. You can find us on Facebook at The Smuggler's Den. You can also email us at our Gmail account, which is smugglersdenpodcast@gmail.com.
And you can also check me out on my streaming at twitch.tv/tinygrimes. And there are a number of archived videos there. And I play a game, I don't know, I'd say at least once a day. I try to play one around 3 p.m. Pacific time every day, and yeah, I waste too much of my time doing that, but come join the party. We have a good time chatting while I'm playing games. So Ben, I thought our first topic this week could be talking about playing, building decks, everything with a greater awareness that this game is played as a match. And what I mean by that is when you're playing a tournament or you're playing a real league or any competitive setting, you are playing a light side deck, then a dark side deck, and there are tie-breaking rules. And it seems to me I've been encountering a lot of people that when they've entered the competitive sphere, because they have not been doing this in their practice, they are sort of thrown for a loop based on even just as simple as how do the tiebreakers work, and more complex of like how they should have been playing their turns based on the tiebreakers. So have you been running into this situation at all, Ben?
I see it a little bit in our local league. There are definitely different types of decks. There are decks that are very strong in a vacuum by themselves. I can think of it's a very similar to the Sith Control deck that was run before the tournament rules came out. And so that was like our first league that we had set up. We just had the core set. No force packs had been released yet at that point. And it was essentially built around just having as many tactics icons in your decks as you possibly could. You might run Mahdi for the resources, something like that. But essentially it was get as many tactics as you could on the board and shut down your opponent from attacking. Do you remember this deck? Do you remember how that played out?
Oh yeah, I remember that deck.
That was your favorite deck for a long time.
It never lost.
And it always got the dial to 12. Your opponent could never punch through enough damage to do it because you were always tacticing out their units, either when you were doing it offensively and pinning somebody down permanently, or when they were attacking and you held back enough cards with your excellent draw as Sith to win the edge battle. But eventually the dial got to 12 and you won. Do you remember what happened when the tournament rules came out for that deck, though?
I remember thinking, my deck, not only does it never blow up objectives, I never even ever attack with the deck, so how would I blow up any objectives?
Right, and so, you know, that was like the first indication that there was going to be a big switch and change now that the tournament rules are out. But I feel like there's like, you know, you have a lot of stuff like that in the community at large as well, where people want to play decks that are fun. They want to include new pods, and it's totally acceptable. And I want to play the new pods as well. The problem just being that when it comes back time to like a serious competitive match, some of those decks just lack that kind of forward momentum that you need. Like, yes, they win. Yes, they're fun to play. But sometimes they just peter out. And that seems to be kind of where the big divide seems to be happening in terms of people who are aware of what's going on with the tournaments and people who aren't.
Yeah, another deck I think that falls into that is the Sith Control deck I made after the Weequay Elites came out, where I just put in a bajillion tactics icons. I mean, it was just disgusting. But I had to take out Vader to do it. And that build of the deck, not only did I not blow up objectives, it only had like 6 blast icons in the whole deck. And so there was like literally no way to even blow up objectives. But I'm not sure I even ever lost. I don't want to say I never lost, but man, it was rare because it had so many tactics in it.
Right, and that's all you would really need. You would need to get out so maybe the protect characters so that direct damage wasn't really an issue. You would get out the anybody with a tactics icon. You would win every edge battle you needed and just shut down people because you could only need to win one edge battle in that situation, right? All you would need to do is block with everybody with tactics, win that edge battle and then tactics out all the possible future attacking units that your opponent has ever. And that was it.
Yep. Not to mention all your objectives had 6 health thanks to the enhancement, so it made it even harder to knock them out.
Right.
The problem is that often one knocking out 0 objectives and your opponent knocking 1 out, which is fine if it's like a dog fight and you got the worst possible draw, but that's how it would work when you got a pretty good draw, and that's kind of a problem.
Right, and so do you want to explain a little bit more specifically why that's a problem? And what happened very consistently after that point in time, after the tournament rules came out?
Yeah, so what happens is with the tournament rules, and I'm sure everyone is aware of this now, but if the dark side wins, you total up the objectives blown up by both you and your opponent on both sides. And so what happens is if you have a deck that doesn't blow anything up, you end up running into the situation there where when you switch sides, if you won with the dark side, you blew up nothing, your opponent blew up 1, you have to blow up a lot of stuff versus their very little, or a best case scenario, you end up having to go to a third game, which I've had to do, which is really frustrating. You don't want to have to go to that third game in match play. But the point of this whole discussion is that the game is not played in a vacuum, that when you're building decks and playing, you need to be thinking in terms of match play, that, okay, like let's say you're playing with a buddy and you are playing with a deck that doesn't blow up many objectives and you're getting near the end of the game and you could just sit there and lock him out and get to 12. Don't end the game like that. Try to get 1 or 2 down. Be thinking, what if this were a match? I should be trying to do this. And yes, it's a little bit more risky, but that's just how matches work. So the way I like to play this game and any other game is to be practicing how you'll be playing when it matters. If you never practice for how you're supposed to play when it matters, when it comes to that time when you play a tournament, you're not thinking about all the little minutiae of every little detail of what you could do to take advantage of the match rules. And this is something I saw a lot at KublaCon. We had maybe like 15 to 20 players that had played the game, but you could tell they didn't have all of the match/tournament experience that some of the other people had. And I'd come up to them in between games and I'd say, hey, how's your day going? And they'd say, well, it's going great, but I actually would have won that last match had I really been thinking about the match rules, and that all I had to do was get the dial up 2 more and I would have won the match. I went all out forgetting, and then they came around and won. And if I had just sat there and got the dial up 2, I would have won.
Yeah, I mean, I had a very similar experience, but on the flip side, where I was playing an opponent, and I mentioned this, I think, previously in a podcast, the podcast immediately after we participated in KublaCon. Everybody needs to remember that I was playing that dark side deck. It was actually really terrible. We don't need to go into details about that. But what was happening was, for the first time all event, my light side was losing, and it lost. And then my opponent had been like really pounding it. They were playing a navy deck. They were really pounding and had taken out a bunch of objectives at that point. I think they had gotten to their second one, and they're 2 or 3 on their way out. And so when I punched through with the light side on what ended up being the last turn, the dial was at 10, and I had enough units that I could take out my second objective. And I thought, well, that's the only way I can do this. I had to somehow tie it up so that the number of objectives that we had both lost were even, because I knew he had won the game at this point. There was just nothing I could do. But instead of when it came to my turn and the force phase, I had an unfocused 3PO. And I could have committed him to the force and only bumped the dial up to 11. But in doing so, I would have given my opponent the opportunity to take out a third objective. And so what I did was I didn't commit 3PO to the force. He retained control of the force. The dial jumped up to 12 at the start of his turn. And we went into the second round with a 2-2 tie in terms of objectives. So I was just thinking to myself at that point, like, you know, if my dark side deck, which, you know, not the one that I played, which was a scum and villainy one, but potentially something along the lines of the Devastating Sith or some of the newer builds that are out there that use a lot of Navy cards as part of the deck, something like that where I could have maybe delayed the light side from taking out objectives or only losing one objective myself, I could have done a lot of damage and tried to get the objective number up so that I could have won that match point.
Right. And I think that's one of the toughest things that people encounter if they're not used to playing, thinking about a match, is especially when you're losing, is adapting your play style to the match rules. You know, so for instance, if you're playing against a Sith deck, like say a straight Sith control deck, and they're just locking you down every turn, and there's pretty much nothing you can do. They're never attacking, but you know, you look at the board and you go, I attack, they lock my whole board down, and they triple focus Luke, and then Luke's locked down next turn too. There's just nothing I can do here. Well, at that point, you can start rethinking your strategy. Yeah, they're going to win, but can you prevent them from knocking out any objectives? Because if you come out of it just an absolute beating 0-0, that's a win. You know, if they go second turn Palpatine, third turn Vader, fourth and fifth turns tactics guys, and they don't knock out any objectives, hey, that's a pretty good scenario. So I have an example of this on my Twitch.tv account where I played a match with someone, and in game one, he just beat me worse than I've ever been beaten. He had an entire board of characters. He was playing straight Sith control. I had nothing the whole game. And so about turn four or five, I realized, huh, okay, I will never try to take the Force. I just want him to have it every turn so the game ends faster, and I'm just going to play Guardians. That way, if he does try to attack me, I'm just going to shield the objectives and just put all the shields I can on objectives and try to make it a 0-0 game. And that's what I was able to do. And then in the second game of the match, I was able to knock out more objectives than him and win the match. That way, despite getting just absolutely manhandled in one game, I won the match. And that's really difficult to do because you're in this absolutely demoralized position where you're sitting there and going, this isn't even a little bit fun. I'm just getting crushed. But it's an opportunity to really still be focused in on the game and have a strategy to play towards those match rules.
Yeah, and I think this is pretty difficult. I haven't checked what the calendar looks like anymore for regionals because everything in the California, kind of southwestern United States is pretty much come and gone at this point. But I still think there are some regionals coming up, at least winding down, if there's not maybe one or two left in the Star Wars regional season. And it seems like we're probably talking about this a little late to the show and a little early to the show because the next big events aren't until the North American Championships at Gen Con or the World Championships in November. But it's one of those things that really kind of, you know, there's plenty of times where you want to play and have fun, and there are plenty of times when you probably want to be thinking about how am I going to build a deck that's going to be competitive enough that you can go forward. And it's definitely a playstyle type of choice. You know, if the only thing you ever do is just goof around with your friends at home and you listen to the podcast just to kind of get an insight into which ones those cards are, the better cards are, and you want to whoop your friends with those cards, that's cool. We'll do that, and that's fine. But, you know, the idea is to try and have this kind of level of play where the competitive nature of the game is just at a, you know, very high standard for everybody.
Yeah, and even if you are just having fun with friends, you can still play matches. Like, it doesn't have to be a tournament, but that's just how this game is intended. It's not intended to go like, all right, I'm going to play Dark Side 6 times and you play Light Side 6 times. Like, the intention of the game is to play a Light Side and a Dark Side and to see who wins the match, even if you just are having fun. And I'm not saying you should always do that. We don't always do that. But that is the way the game is intended. And I agree, you're right. We are late in the season, but I think there's still going to be other little tournaments. I know we'll host some. Then there'll be Gen Con. Then there'll be more little tournaments than Worlds. But as I said before, I think it's really the way you practice is how you improve. And if you don't practice with these rules in mind and how a match operates, you're just not going to be able to easily adapt to them when they do matter. And for anyone who cares, the title of the games are called How to Win a Match Game 1. That's where I just get my rear handed to me. And How to Win a Match Game 2 is the second game of that match. And it's an interesting commentary of me being both surly about getting crushed so hard and talking about how I'm adapting my play at this point because I know I've lost.
It's very nice use of foresight on that one, Tiny. I'm surprised that you were able to pull yourself off the brink of essentially probably what would be close to suicide at that point, of you losing the game, to then be able to, you know, clear your mind and know, hey, I'm on a stream, I'm commentating, I should probably try and make this sound a little better.
It is actually one thing I really like about this game. I hate losing, and I really hate getting crushed, but it adds another level to it that even when you are losing really badly, there's still something at stake. It's not just you sitting there going, yeah, you played another big character, wonderful. I drew three terrible characters. This is great. Like, that's just not a fun game to be a part of, but it makes it a little more fun when there's actually something you're still trying to do instead of just trying to end the game so you can start a new one.
Yeah, no, that's true.
All right, so the next topic I thought we could talk about is Ripped from the Headlines. Dun, dun. Did you like that? Did you catch the Law and Order there?
It was a fairly bad beat, but I understood what you're trying to do there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty good, especially since Law & Order is canceled and no one's probably heard of it anymore.
It's still on reruns 9 times a day on USA, though, I think.
Yeah, I've watched them all, by the way. All right, but that's neither here nor there. The question that I've seen on the boards is a simple question, and it's just, would you ever discard a Twist of Fate? So we'll start simple, and I'll just ask you, hey, Ben, would you ever discard a Twist of Fate?
I don't think I have ever discarded a Twist of Fate. But you know who I have seen discard Twist of Fates?
Who's that?
You.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I would say no, with a caveat.
Yeah, with a big asterisk at the end.
Yes, exactly. Because for me, only a Sith speaks in absolutes. And I'm not a Sith. So I would say all no's or nevers or worst card evers have an asterisk of, maybe not. But I would say generally, turn one especially, I'm not discarding a twist unless I'm playing like one copy of a Leopod and I just want to put it in their mind, hey, maybe he's playing two copies and he's got another twist. But generally, I will not discard a twist for the simple reason of it gives my opponent power. If I'm playing a pod that has twists and I'm obviously playing it and they know I'm playing it and they see me discard one, that's a big gimme. That's telling them, hey, there's only one more in that massive deck. I don't really have to worry about him that much. And once I see the second one, well, now I've just got him right where I want him.
It's interesting because I feel like there have been plenty of times, maybe it's just my mind, maybe mixing the different Fate cards together, but I feel like I've seen you play them maybe a little, only as like a desperation move. You know, I've seen, I think, play, you know, you have one card or two cards left in your hand, and you're kind of in that like middle ground where you could win if you drew the right card, you could lose if you didn't draw the right card, and you say, wow, these are both really good cards in my hand. I'm going to have to discard one of them because I want to get 5 cards this turn. And for whatever reason, you pick Twist of Fate. And maybe that's not the case. Maybe you've never actually done that. Maybe it's always been a Heat of Battle or something. And I've known for sure that I've seen you discard Heat of Battle on the first turn. Where you've been like, well, I need Heat of Battle. I don't need that this right now. I'm going to draw a card. Like, I want all these units and resources. But I feel like that must have happened at some point for me to be like, wait, did you discard a twist? But maybe you never did. I mean, I would never do it. It's too good.
Let me rephrase that. I guess the question should have been, would you ever discard a twist turn one? And my answer is no. Would I ever discard a twist at any point in the game? Definitely. I definitely would. Once it gets to be the midpoint of a game and the board has been established, especially in a game with few battles or battles where edge battles aren't mattering, then I'll discard it. What I will more often do with a twist, and I love to do this turn one with a twist, is to use Vader's objective, Fall of the Jedi, and stick it under my deck. Because I hate having twist turn one, but turn one, there's no way I'm going to discard one and just let them know, oh, that you don't have to worry about that anymore. But if I stick it under my deck, they have no idea what went under there. And so now it's almost even better. Like, I know I'm never going to see that second twist, right?
Right.
But my opponent thinks, holy cow, he's seen so much of his deck, he must have a second twist. And it's almost more powerful there because you can get a card with a lot of force icons, and they assume, like, when you put one down and then pass, that it must be a twist because you must have gotten that second one by now. So that's my theory on would I ever discard twists. So, Ben, you're saying you pretty much never discard twists ever, and is this just because they're so powerful?
I think it's a lot to do with powerful. I feel like I'm just thinking back to every game I've ever played and thought to myself, what am I going to do with this Twisted Fate? And I think it just comes down to with the light side, right? The twists tend to be so strong because you have so few of them. And there is a couple dark side builds where you can have up to 5 Twisted Fates in the deck. And so, you know, in that situation, I'm trying to think, okay, maybe if I was playing a deck and I had 5 Twisted Fates and I drew a hand, and I'm trying to think if this ever happened to me, and I drew a hand and 3 of the cards in those hands turned out to be Twisted Fate, would I discard one the next turn when I got an opportunity? And I think that's happened to me, and I didn't do it. Like, I had 3 Twisted Fate in my hand, and I needed cards, but I was like, but you know what? I'm just going to make them burn. Like, even if I use all 3 of them in one edge battle, like, I'm going to do something that's going to change the state of the game. I'm going to use up all the cards in their hand. I'm going to win a free edge battle on defense, and then maybe, you know, it'll change it. I think that's happened. I don't think even in that point I discarded Twisted Fate.
See, I think what I would do there is I would make a big show about, like, I'd hold it, and I'd go back and forth between my hand and be like, oh, my God, I can't believe I have to discard this, but I'm in such dire straits, I just have to throw it on the twist, drop a couple cards. They now assume you don't have a twist, and then you play 2 and completely bone them.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of options there. I feel like in that one particular case, I think I strung it out over, like, all the turns and just had somebody be like, you know, 2 turns later be like, did you really just see 3 of your 4 Twisted Fate? And I'd be like, yeah, I actually drew them all in one turn and have just been using them against you in that painful, slow death kind of way.
See, I always lie there, and I'll be like, yeah, I just keep top decking them. Whatever card I need, I just top deck it. Like, I did that the other day. I had, like, 2 Lukes turn 1. They finally killed Luke turn 4, and I'm going, come on, Luke. Come on, Luke. And I draw some random card, and then I play it. I'm like, yep, top deck Luke. You know, I like to give that impression that, you know, I'm not only somewhat skilled, but I'm also incredibly lucky.
You do seem incredibly lucky when you do that.
Right, and it just really frustrates your opponent. And I know that maybe that sounds bad, but as a competitive player, frustrating your opponent is very helpful in this game because one false move and sometimes it's over.
Right. So what other cards do you think are up there in that type of power level of Twisted Fate where you wouldn't discard, even in most scenarios where you wouldn't discard in some way or maybe potentially use them in an edge battle? Because I feel like a lot of this also deals with some of the cards that we have on our list also deal very strongly with edge battles. Like, it's not that I just wouldn't discard it to draw. I also wouldn't discard it, you know, because the same information is given away, even if it gives me, you know, 2 edge icons. What other cards are you thinking about in this type of realm?
A really good card in what you've just described is Counterstroke.
Counterstroke.
Because Counterstroke has 2 force icons. And there have been so many edge battles where I'm like, oh my goodness, if I put this Counterstroke in, I think I'm going to win this edge battle. But Counterstroke's that card that sort of keeps your opponent in check. Now, if I'm in a game where I don't have a lot of resources, I'm not that worried about Counterstrokes. But if I'm in a situation where I'm going to be able to keep the one back every time, Counterstroke is such a powerful card because your opponent is going to keep looking at that discard pile. Let me see that again. And you know what they're looking for? They're looking to see, have you played the Counterstroke yet? Because they've got Force Lightning in their hand, or they have Detained in their hand, or they have the Super Laser Blast or some devastating card in their hand, and you keep leaving that one resource open, and once you discard one, and especially 2, then they just kind of go, all right, cool, Force Lightning everything.
That's exactly what I would do. Force lightning all of the things.
Yeah, exactly. I'll force lightning him. I'll blow something up. I'll get it back with Palpatine. I'll force lightning him. Yeah. It's a nice card to just kind of keep your opponent guessing, keep them in check. It's a nice card to fake. If you haven't discarded any yet and you're clearly running two, just keep leaving a Jedi resource open. Yeah, they're going to sit there and go, he must have it. He must have drawn it by now. Look how many cards he's drawn.
Right. It's got a very lot of utility. The type of mind trick type stuff that you're trying to do in this level of play has to do so much with a really strong opponent knows, based on the cards I played, how many copies of these cards I have, right? And so it's just a matter of like being able to be like, I can't give them the information. I can't let them know, even no matter how vital those two force icons might be in an edge battle. You know, you can't give away, because a good player is going to be holding back cards like Force Lightning, which right. is probably on the list, right, Tiny?
I don't know. What do you think? Should it be on the list?
I think Force Lightning is probably definitely on that list.
All right. So you're saying you would not discard Force Lightning?
I would not discard. I've used it in edge battles before. I've definitely used it in a scenario, and this is the scenario I've used it in, is where they have so many, like they have a 3PO on the table. Maybe this is their second 3PO. Maybe I've already tried a Force Lightning. Maybe they have that resource open. I'm like, well, I'm never going to play Force Lightning right now. This is never going to happen. I'll put it in an edge battle, use it for that one icon, and then draw an extra card next turn. But generally speaking, especially early game where I haven't seen any cancels, especially in a deck that maybe isn't running something like that. So if it's a non-Jedi deck I'm playing against, Force Lightning stays in my hand. I wait for them to come out and leave a focused Rogue 3 or Home 1 or something on the table and just do what I can to take it out as fast as I can.
Yeah, I agree. I'd say the only time I'm willing to discard or use a Force Lightning in an edge battle is if I have a Palpatine on the table, or if I have one that I know is coming and I'm going to play it, and I have an objective that I'm about to blow up, or I'm playing a Rebel deck that I know is going to be able to blow up objectives. Force Lightning is that card that, since it only has one Force icon, you know, it's just not really worth burning in an edge battle. I'd be tempted to say I've never put one in, but that's probably not true, because there's always those situations where, like, your opponent puts in their entire hand, and you only have a couple cards, but you're able to twist that, and then you only have the one card left, and you either play Force Lightning and win that edge battle or lose the edge battle by default. Like, there I might play it, but normally it's just not good enough to put in an edge battle, and it's just so powerful. I mean, it's the great equalizer. That card kills everything. It's just not worth discarding.
As much as it's a great equalizer, it's the great face stomper too. Yeah. It's also the card you play when you're really far ahead and your opponent's trying to struggle back, and then you stomp them in the face and discard that one card that they've really needed and have put a lot of effort into getting on the table. And then you're like, oh, was that a problem that I just took out your Luke without having to do anything? Wow, that's terrible.
Yeah, and it's that card that, because it's so often useless for the first two turns, it just sits in your hand, and it's even more frustrating because you can be like, yep, just top decked it right when I needed it, and it's just been sitting there waiting for a good target.
I feel like this is something that you must be doing all the time.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh yeah, I just top decked it. No, is that just like your favorite word whenever you're playing the game?
Yeah, because it's the thing that frustrates me the most. When I've set up the board, everything's perfect, and I've done everything I can, and then they just top deck Luke and Han and win, and you're just like, that is why sometimes this game makes me want to punch walls. and when that happens, that's how you can tilt me. You can tilt me by drawing Han followed by Luke. That will tilt me.
Interesting. So just the random luck of the draws will tilt you.
Yeah, that's like the only thing that tilts me, because I feel like that's the one part of the game that you cannot control with skill. You can mitigate that part of the game, right? You can give yourself more draw. You can give yourself more resources to be able to play the more cards. But there really is not a way to mitigate, I've played exactly how I should, and they just top decked, you know, two cards that are going to win the game.
It's an interesting theory. about how to tilt you. I'll have to remember that for the next big time we face each other down.
So remember, if you play me in Worlds, you can tilt me with lucky draws.
pretending to have lucky draws.
Right. The only problem with this strategy is you have to already be like these lucky draws have to win you the game anyway. So it's really double tilting me because you're winning the game anyway.
Right. Right.
But so maybe it tilts me for the match.
Crushing you and then also on top of that, crushing you harder.
Right. And then just kick me in the balls under the table just to like triple tilt me.
Yep. There you go.
That'll do it. All right. So another one for me, and this one's a little trickier, is Jedi Mind Trick. Jedi Mind Trick is really strong, and it's really surprising because a lot of people aren't playing it right now. But if you show them you're running the Obi-Wan pod, then they start playing around it. And so either way, I just detest discarding this card because it only costs one, so it's not that hard to play. It really locks down your opponent. Like, the only time I discard this is if I'm playing against a Navy deck. And even against a Navy deck, I save it for a little while because maybe they're playing the Vader pod. Maybe I can nail Mahdi at the perfect time or the resource Chud with the
Colonel Stark
icon, stuff like that.
Colonel Stark would be a good target for this.
Colonel Stark's another good target. So there's even targets against Navy. It's a really good card. It's very rare that I discard it or put in an edge bail.
It's such a – it can be so useful at all times. I don't disagree. I can't disagree on that one. I want to think – I mean, I've talked about this before about why I don't like Jedi Mind Trick, and it's only because I never see it when I need it. It's always sitting in my hand, and I can never play it, or I'm always like, oh, man, if I had a Jedi Mind Trick right here, I could win. And then I would draw six cards and not see any of my four Jedi Mind Tricks for the fifth game in a row. And I was like, well, I'm done with this. No more Mind Tricks ever. So I just don't think I ever had the opportunity to discard it in any way, shape, or form. And when I was playing Jedi decks that use it heavily. And it's been a while.
You just need to shuffle better, man.
I think I shuffle too well. I think that's my problem. It's like I'm such a pro shuffler that the cards all end up at the bottom of the deck.
I see.
Yeah.
Maybe you should take magic classes.
Maybe I should become a magician. Yeah. Maybe learn a little French on the side.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. Inside joke. All right. Any other cards you would put on this list?
The one other card I think that really goes on this list, and it probably is one of the better examples of this, is Detain. Right, especially in a situation where your opponent knows you're running that pod, and you keep, you know, maybe on purpose or maybe not on purpose, maybe it's just the way it's coming out. You keep leaving those two resources open to make it look like you're about to play Detained. Right, as soon as you discard one, you know that's it. I mean, like it's like, hey, they only have one left. All I need to counter this is one 3PO or one Counterstroke or whatever it is. Then all of a sudden that. Everything changes because when there's still two in the deck and I don't know when it's coming, you know, maybe I'll waste a 3PO on one only for you to be able to play a second one the next turn. And so as soon as I see on a Navy deck that's only using a very limited number of events and Detain goes out the window, I mean, that just means I start putting my Counterstrokes into the edge battle, right? I start getting those two Force icons where at any other point before then, I'm going to keep it back and keep a resource open so that, you know, so I'm not playing to my full efficiency so that I can cancel that Detain.
Yeah, and especially if you're again playing against a Jedi deck that's either running only four resources, which we're actually seeing as some popular builds, or just a deck that got unlucky, like they cannot drop Luke and attack if you have Detain in your hand. It's just not worth it. And I've had games where I've just sat there and gone back and forth and went, well, do they have Detain? Do I wait a turn so that I can fake that I have a Counterstroke or pray that I draw one? And it becomes really tough. Whereas if you just discard your Detain or throw it into an edge battle that seems like it's critical, their decision process and their resource allocation gets so much easier.
Yeah, it just makes it easier on your opponent where you just don't want to do that. And as I said a bunch of times in a bunch of games, both in just kind of friendly play, league play, games where I know I've lost, and they're like, well, do you want to just call it? I'll say things like, well, let's make you make the right decisions.
Right.
And I say that all the time to people, even in tournaments. Like, I'm like, I think you have this, but you only have this if you play it perfectly. And sometimes it's really obvious, and, you know, and they'll play it without even thinking about it. They're like, oh, yeah, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to tackle this, tactics that guy, put this guy into play, do this, do that, da 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 da. That's a game. And there have been other times where I've snuck out another round because instead of like giving in, they were, you know, I made them play the way that they needed to play. And yep. As soon as I have more information, the way that I need to play is much different than what it would have been.
Yeah. And that's what I find really fascinating about this game. And we've talked about this before, that it is so much an information game. And not just an information game, but what you can do because of that information, all the different bluffing you can do. You know, people compare this to Netrunner, and they say, Netrunner has so much more bluffing. And that may be, I'm not a big Netrunner player, but I would argue that this game has a ton of bluffing, but it's all based on, you know, knowing your opponent knows all the pods and all the different tricks you can do and what resources you're leaving open and what that implies about your hand and your deck, and there's so much you can do with the information part of the game.
And that just adds to it. Anytime you throw something like a Detained away, it changes how you play the game.
Yep. And another card that we haven't added, which I think is obvious, is Rebel Assault. Like, yep. I can't imagine why I would ever discard this when you can just pay 2 and do 2 damage to something instead.
It's a very strong card. I mean, it seems like we're kind of honing in. So this is almost like a different list of strong cards. You know, if our last episode we listed cards that we thought were meta-defining, these are cards that are like informationally defining, right? Like, these are cards that people know exist. They may not be in every deck, but when they're played, when they're in somebody's deck that you're playing and you have the information that they're there, you want to be so careful when you're playing against them because they can really swing the way the game is playing.
Definitely. Now, the last card that I would want to mention, this is a tough one, Palpatine.
Are you asking, would I ever discard a Palpatine into an edge battle?
Yes. Would you put Palpatine into an edge battle?
You know, there was a point in time where I didn't think it was a problem, right? I think there was a period early in when we were playing where we just thought that Yoda was too fragile, that there was no reason to ever play Yoda because when Vader was on the table, he got force choked so quickly, it wasn't even worth playing.
Yep.
There was definitely a period of time when that happened. And Yoda went into the edge battle almost every time. It was like, oh, yeah, I got Yoda. That means I'm going to win this next edge battle coming up. This is really good.
Yep.
And so for a while, I felt like maybe I had the same mentality for Palpatine, where I was, you know, every so often I'd have one on the table already, and I think he was pretty safe and secure, so maybe I'll just hold back and play, use the Palpatine as a really strong edge card and just do what you said before, where I have a good edge number, I'll play one card in, they'll think it's a twist of fate. It's not. I get the win. It's awesome. Until very recently when I did it, I was playing a game, and I drew two Palpatines on the same turn. And I played one, and I had the other one in my hand. I was like, well, I'm never going to lose this Palpatine. I already have this game in the bag. And I put it into an edge battle, won that edge battle, and then Palpatine died by some stupid trick that I wasn't even thinking about. And then wished to myself, I was like, wow, I really wish I kept that Palpatine that for when I had two of them in my hand. Because it was only like one or two turns later. And if I had been able to put another one on the board, it would have kept the game in my favor and really shifted the way it was playing. I do think I was playing a demo game, if I remember correctly. And so I wasn't trying to be ultra competitive in this sense. And so I think I was just toying around a little bit. But when I lost, I was like, wow, I probably should have kept Palpatine in my hand.
Yeah, for me, this is a really tricky one because there's times where, you know, every now and then you get in that edge battle where it's like, if I put Palpatine in, I will win the edge battle because I'm playing a Rebel deck. They don't have the Leia pod. I'm attacking with the Devastator. He's going to kill Red 2, and he's going to blow up an objective, and all I have to do is give up my second copy of Palpatine to do it. I already have one on the board. And in that spot, every now and then I do, but I used to do it regularly, and where it changed for me is when I was playing other people, and I realized as soon as they put a Palpatine in the edge battle, I would cheer inside, even if there was one on the board, because it just made the game so much easier. All I got to do, kill that Palpatine, and I am doing really, really well.
Yeah. I mean, that's essentially what happened, right? I discarded it and almost immediately regretted my decision.
Yeah, because there are a lot of ways to kill him now. I mean, like, if you're playing against a Jedi deck, they have deflections, they have heats of battle, they have tons of targeted strike, they have echo caverns, they have all these ways to do direct damage to Palpatine. Now, if I get lucky and I get two protectors out and then put a Palpatine out, okay, at that point, I'm feeling pretty safe. I probably drop the other Palpatine for an edge battle. But if he's unprotected, even against Rebels, because they always have their heat of battle, Rebel assault trick, it's unlikely I'm putting the second one in an edge battle. So, Ben, anyone else or any other cards you think are necessary to add to this list?
No, I think that I'm sure there are. And I think that if anybody has something that was very obvious that we missed, and it's probably very likely at this point, I'm already finding it much more difficult to remember all the cards in the game. But I think people, at least the listeners out there, are kind of getting an idea of what we're saying when we say this and why it's so important to not just kind of throw cards away without thinking about what the consequences might be for play when that happens.
Yeah, and I think this also, when we start talking about big characters, I mean, it's not just Palpatine. We could probably put another 8 characters on just the big important character list.
Like and Han Solo, right? I mean, you would just say any of the big characters. So if their opponent discards Han Solo in an edge battle and there's one on the table, you're like, oh my god, this is going to be so easy now.
Right. And I think what a lot of this comes down to is edge battles and people just misassessing whether they need to win an edge battle or not. And this is still a problem, and we're not going to talk about it a lot again because we've already revisited it. But so many people think they have to win most of the edge battles, and there are usually only, I'm going to say, 3 edge battles a game that you need to win. Does that sound about right?
I would like to know exactly what you mean by 3 edge battles, but yes, sure, definitely. What 3 are you talking about?
Well, what I mean is throughout the game, there will probably be about 3 edge battles that have a big enough swing on the board presence or on the objective damage where you really need to win that edge battle. And they usually involve Palpatine. If Palpatine's in on either side and you can either lock him down or he locks down all your guys, sometimes those edge battles are really critical. But otherwise, like if it's just between you gaining one more blast icon or not, you don't want to throw in like a Han and a Luke to make sure you win that, right? It's just that edge battle is not important enough to throw away really good cards for.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I still don't know how you get the 3 number, but that's fine.
That was a random number.
All right, that's it.
Sometimes
it seems
zero.
Like a random number.
I've had games where there was not a single edge battle that mattered, but in those edge battles, I would still put in cards hoping my opponent would think it would matter. And sometimes I do the mind trick and be like, man, this is a real game changer. Oh, I guess I'll put in another one and then another one, and they're all awful cards, but I'm sweating it out and acting like this is the critical edge battle of the game, and they, you know, for like that brief moment, get sucked in and put a Palpatine in, and then we flip them over, and I'm like, oh no, I lost one blast icon and you gave up with Palpatine.
Right. That's a good point.
So those are, I guess, so this conversation has shifted a bit from not only what cards would you not want to put into edge battles or discard, but also little tricks you can do to maybe take advantage of your opponent a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think that at some degree, to some degree, both of those things are really linked pretty heavily. It's all about, both of these ideas are about the idea of how to play your opponent, not just the cards that are on the table, right? It's very similar to anybody who's played competitive poker before. You're not actually generally always playing the cards on the table. You're playing the other person sitting in the chair across from you.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So there is one other topic that we've talked about this before, so I'm not going to talk about it a lot, except for to ask you, do you find this game to be more unforgiving than other games you've played? For me, the big comparison point is Game of Thrones, and I know it is for you. Do you find this game to be more unforgiving in that one or two small to large misplays swings the game dramatically?
Well, I think, yes. I think the game, I don't know if it suffers is the right word. I think it the game forces players to play at a very high caliber level to be consistent. There are a lot of mistakes that people can make, very simple ones, and it depends on the situation that you're in. Maybe it's just as simple as putting the resource, like for new players, putting the wrong resources on the wrong, or the, using the wrong resources in the wrong order. Maybe you double focus something that had two resources available, but then failed to realize that you probably could have redistributed them more effectively. And in a tournament situation, you know, that might cost you a card, it might cost you a counterstroke, it might cost you something, and that can have a huge effect on the game. I mean, other things, I mean, to some degree, I feel like it's there are other times where it's unforgiving, where it's like an edge battle that you lost, right? Like, you needed to win that edge battle, and you lost it, and the whole game swings on that. In that situation, the game is unforgiving, but I don't know if that's so much a player mistake as just, like, the unfortunate side of, you know, games that are at random, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and that to me is a little bit different question.
Than making a player mistake. Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
And I think it's interesting because the game is both incredibly unforgiving and incredibly forgiving at the same time. And what I mean by that is there are so many games where one tiny play error, turn one, like you put down some unit, you commit it to the force, and then you realize, oh, wow, I was supposed to do a lot of damage with this unit quickly. Like, that's the point of this deck. And actually just committing that unit first turn is probably what lost me the game. I mean, there were some other things that could have happened differently, and I could have pulled out the win anyway, but I can look at that game and say, yeah, that actually cost me the game. At the same time, it's incredibly forgiving in that you can make a big mistake and just go, top deck, Palpatine, drop him, and then have a big advantage.
Right. I mean, I can think of a couple examples, and I know that you just play so many games on Octagon and over the course of the week that I think they all start to blur together for you.
definitely do.
But I because I only watch a select few of them, normally when I'm supposed to be really busy at work, I can think of two off the top of my head where the play mistake happened on your opponent's side. And in one example I can think of, your opponent, you had on the board, you had the one resource character, you had Mahdi, and then you had a AT-ST committed to the force with a shield on it. And they attacked with a Guardian and Han Solo. And they attacked and did the one damage of Han Solo to the AT-ST, taking off the shield, and then kind of went through the rest of the challenge. You didn't defend. Use the other two damage to take out Mahdi. Your turn came around. You then had that one extra resource guy you put into play. I forget exactly what it was. Either you played a Force Lightning or you played Palpatine the next turn and just completely shifted the turn of the game, where if he had taken out that resource guy, you would have been unable to play all the cards that you wanted to play next turn, and it would have been a huge change. And it was that indecision of who he was going after, who he or she or the other player was going after. I think there might have been one damage on the AT-ST, so they thought, well, if I take out the shield, I can do two damage to the AT-ST. And when it looked like that was going to happen, I was essentially screaming at the computer, like, no, don't go after the AT-ST. It's completely pointless. Why is that even important to you? Take out Mahdi, take out the resource guy. Those are your targets. And so, you know, in that situation, I think that was a very clear example of how a mistake can really – and you went on to win that game, I think, pretty handily. Maybe not handily. Maybe it was a little tougher. The other game I can think of that I was watching of yours was that you were the light side and they were the dark side. And you had nothing going for you. Like, it was like you had a little bit, maybe you had a couple cards out, and your opponent played Palpatine and then attacked with him.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, and you're on the stream going, I'm out. You know, he played Palpatine. You're like, I'm out of this. Like, there's almost nothing I can do now. It's really going to be the end of the game for me. Like, I can't do anything. And he attacked with him. And you went, And he, I think he ended up he was going to put 3 focus tokens on the Renegade Squadron. Mm. Right? That was what he was targeting. Renegade Squadron has elite. He's going to put it out for 2 turns, but it had been on the board. And he attacked with Palpatine, and you went, you know, that mistake's going to cost him the game. It might not. He could top deck into the cards that he needs still, but that cost him the game right there because he attacked. He only focused 1 unit. It wasn't on defense. You had Echo Cavers in play. It's like you were like, all I need to do is draw, you know, 1 card that has a focus token on it or focus icon, and I have the Echo Caverns open. I just need to transfer what, so I just need 2 focus tokens total or focus icons total, and I can shut down Palpatine for the rest of the game, and that's going to be the game for him. And I think in that, I forget exactly what happened, but you drew into a bunch of cards and you didn't get a focus or a tactics icon, and you're like, well, this might be a problem. But then something came along and you ended up winning that game. You were out. You were dead to rights. That game was lost. You were not going to win. But because he attacked with Palpatine, because he allowed Palpatine to be essentially tactics out, you were able to turn the game around.
Yep.
And those are just examples I can think of off the top of my head where the player mistake caused the loss very clearly, very obviously. And it's, you know, it's a little bit of experience. It's a little bit of maybe bravado. They thought they could do it, like, oh, I'm just gonna triple tactics this Renegade Squadron, I'm gonna totally be sitting pretty now. But in the end it comes back and bites, you know, and it's a lesson learned, but it bites you in the it took us that first time and you do it.
Yeah, and so I guess the question then from that is, if the game is really unforgiving and that one mistake can cost you the game, is this a bad thing? Because that seems to be what's being bandied about on the board, that is this a bad thing for the game? And even, does this need to be fixed?
Does the game need to be fixed because it makes you play at a high caliber all the time? Is that really the question that's being asked? because it requires the players to make the right call every time, it's a bad game. Or potentially not as good as it could be. Is that really the question?
It seems to be, yeah.
I don't mean to sound exasperated with this. I just think it's a silly, potentially non-debate to have. I don't even know what you're referring to. I don't know what boards you're referring to, or even the comments that this is coming from. I just think that to say that the game might not be, you know, some idea of perfection because when you make a mistake, that's the game. I mean, there are plenty of competitive games that are like that. I mean, you should be playing not to make mistakes. I don't see why you would play competitively and think it's okay to make mistakes.
Yeah, I think the point that people are trying to make is that more so than other games, the one mistake can undo a really good setup. Like you were talking about, you drop Palpatine, you are winning, the game is over. Then you attack with them and suddenly you're losing and the game's over because you made one mistake. Is that a problem?
No.
Yeah, I agree with that. To me, that's a good thing. I want games that the better players... Okay, this is probably sound really bad. If I'm the better player, I prefer a game where I win 100% of the time. That's... Right. The game I prefer. Now, that assumes I don't make mistakes. The better player can make mistakes. The point is, the better player in that game, the person who's not making mistakes, making all the right plays, I would prefer they win 100% of the game. And I feel like Star Wars is not like that because of the top decking element. So I'm very happy that when I make a mistake, I lose from my mistake rather than my opponent top decking things. Now, I won't be happy during the game. I'm going to be really furious with myself that I made that mistake. But at the end of the day, I lost the game. The deck didn't lose the game. I lost the game. And I much prefer the games to end like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely the flip side of the question. I think that's much more Star Wars. And if I was to make a decision on what was Star Wars, the card game's pluses and minuses, I think that a minus for me would be is that you could be winning the game and not made any mistakes and lose to a miraculous draw of some kind. That there's enough strong cards in the game that your opponent can draw the perfect hand and win the game. based off that perfect hand, even after they've made a mistake or two that should have cost them the game. I think that is more something that I dislike about Star Wars, the card game, than on the other hand of if I make a mistake, then it's my fault and that's why I lost the game.
Yeah, I agree.
I think we were in agreement there. I just wanted to echo, that a lot of that situations, I think of a lot of specifics, or not maybe specifics, but generalities of where a Rebel deck wins on turn two because they got Rogue Three and Wedge and an Astromech Droid on turn one and two. And to me, that's not a sign of good play. That's a sign of really being lucky. And the reverse side of that is having the right cards and knowing how to play them properly to win, and not being able to do that is the sign of, making yourself a better player as opposed to just somebody who bases it on luck a lot of the time.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so we've had thus far a pretty theoretical type show. So for our last segment, we're going to get a little bit more specific.
Not us.
So Ben, I'm going to ask you this question. What are you playing this week? And before you answer, I will say this. We're recording the show on Monday. The full text of the cards have been spoiled. However, we haven't seen images, so we're not entirely sure these spoilers are fully accurate. So we're not doing reviews of the cards. But in what we're playing this week, we're probably going to use some of these cards and be assuming the spoilers are correct. Now, if they are wrong by some turn, we're sorry about that, but we're relying on the fact that these spoilers are correct.
Yeah, so what am I going to play this week? So I'm going to use a spoiler that I know is real because I saw the card images. And so this weekend, Team Covenant over at teamcovenant.com and their YouTube page, they had a spoiler session, a 20-minute video where they discussed the new Smugglers and Spies pod that is coming out in the next Force pack.
I'm going to have to stop you for a second. Did they do 20 minutes on that?
They did 20 minutes on that.
Wow, that's a long spoiler.
They talked about the Cole Sarah guy for like 15 of the 20 minutes.
Wow, I know this is probably going to sound blasphemous. He doesn't look that good to me.
Well, that's what I'm excited to play with him.
Okay,
so... And so... The objective set that's coming out for, and I'm only going to talk in generalities because you can go to teamcovenant.com, you can go and you can see the spoiler that they have up there of the specifics with the card art and the actual text. But suffice it to say that the objective has an ability that allows you to play a card off the top of your deck into an edge battle so that you don't need to have them in your hand. And, this is one of those things that really can be hit or miss. It's a double-edged sword, depending on what that card is. You could be throwing away a really great card in doing that, but at the same time, it's one less card that you need to have in your hand to win that edge battle. It's another card, another way of kind of playing games with your opponent. The other thing that goes along with
Wait. Didn't we just say there were piles of cards you would never throw into an edge battle, and you're risking just blindly throwing it in?
Yeah, of course I would.
Okay, cool. Move on.
That's how I roll. The other sets of cards kind of all interact with winning the edge battle. There was an ability that seemed fairly strong where if you win the edge battle by two or more force icons, you got this outcome. And then the real centerpiece, which was also spoiled on the FFG boards, was Cole Sarah, who is the leader of the Renegade Squadron. I had to go and look all this stuff up on Wikipedia about who this guy was and why it's even included. For those Star Wars fans who don't know anything about it, you should go do that. That seems to be something that I missed vitally in my childhood of Star Wars-ness that I used to think I was so skilled on. But he has the Edge 1 keyword so that he gets that extra Edge icon just being in the battle, and then has the text. It's a passive text that if you win the Edge while Cole Sarah is participating, he can't take damage and can't take tactics icons. And it's, in a vacuum, it seems like an okay ability, but I really like it because I think it fits in well with a deck that I was playing at the Chatsworth Regional, which was a Rebel Hoth deck. And so this is another Hoth objective. you could play all three of the Smugglers and Spies Hoth objectives, and then also the lights, you know, the Rebel Hoth operations and potentially preparation for battle, to get access to the speeder tanks or maybe sensors replaced, whichever kind of way you want to go in it. And then you have this kind of amalgamation of cards that all have these bonuses in the edge battle so that you can be winning more consistently. If you have the speeders out and you have multiple speeders attacking, they get the edge bonus. If you have Cole Sarah, you get the edge bonus. And you have these kind of like ability to put your opponent on the back foot, make it much harder for them to win those edge battles. And that was something I really liked when it was working in that Rebel Smugglers and Spies deck that I had a while ago. And so I really like to see which combination of cards I could put in to make it feel like that again.
Yeah, I think it sounds like an interesting deck because this new pod is so good at doing that. So you can do things like play that Don't Get Cocky is the one you were talking about, where if you win an edge battle by two, then you get two black blast damage icons, and that's phenomenal. It's like basically getting a Rebel Assault off for one against an objective. That's really strong. Of course, the question is you have to win by two, and so you're basically saying by using sensors and by getting all the bonuses, you're actually going to be able to pull that off more often.
Which is what I'm hoping, yeah.
Right. And then the other thing is a Stinging Insult makes it so that they have to defend with certain guys. And so it's a way to make them do things they don't want to do so that maybe it's more likely you're going to get that unopposed, so that you can use Don't Get Cocky. It's an interesting deck. My problem with Cole Sarah is that his stuff, both of his blast damage icons are edge dependent. So it's like, if you don't win edge with him, he's a four cost piece of junk character.
Yeah, he has some upsides and downsides. I think it's one of those decks that it definitely requires you to think very carefully. And it might be one of those things where I only am running one copy of Cold Sarah, right? I mean, I'm trying to think off the top of my head how I would do it just right now. And you can't run all six Smugglers and Spies Hoth objectives in you can't run duplicates of the three that we have and also run Preparation for Battle and also run Sensors in Place and also run Hoth Operations and have a 10 objective deck sized deck. And so maybe it's one of those things you wouldn't run one Cold Sarah. You run one of the Renegade Squadron ones. You include Sensors Are Placed, and then you include Preparation for Battle. And it's going to be some combination of that to make sure that you have enough speeders for it to make sense. But, it just was one of the first times I was like, oh, wow, I'm pretty excited to see if I can do something with this edge, with these edge abilities.
Yeah, I like it a lot. I think I'll be trying something like it. I don't know if it's going to be viable. I haven't looked at all the resources and all the little aspects of it. As a general idea, I like it. What I like best is that they're all Hoth objectives. So if you can get that objective out, anytime one of your objectives gets blown up, you get to bounce something. So it could be a situation where you're constantly bouncing their Devastator or their Palpatine, and you're really slowing down what they're able to put on the board. And if you're able to put out a ton of stuff, and every turn they're putting out their one Palpatine, it's going to really slow them down.
Yeah.
So I like it. It's promising, I think.
I'm excited.
The deck that I'm going to try this week is going to be based around the new Jedi pod, and I don't really like the contents of it that much, but I do like Knowledge and Defense, the objective itself, which basically, if it says if it's undamaged, you get to return any units that were destroyed during engagement to your hand instead of the discard pile. And so my thought was, if I could do something with that and then use pod 6, which is Last Minute Rescue and has the card Emergency Repair in it, I can heal up this objective with that. I can heal the objective with the Daughters of Alia, which I believe I'll end up with four of them. Because I think it's going to be, yeah, it says it includes two copies of them. So all four of them, two copies of Emergency Repair. Then from there, I'm not entirely sure where the deck goes. One incarnation I've thought of is using the new neutral pod for the light side, which has some extra resources in it. Maybe two copies of Luke, two copies of Yoda, and one copy of Han. That way I'm able to have a whole bunch of different cards that I can play Return of the Jedi on. I can play it again on two Yodas, two Lukes, or four Daughters of Alia. That would be one incarnation. Another incarnation could be to use the Protector Pod. That way, it's not only protecting your characters, it's also protecting knowledge and defense from actually taking damage by redirecting to that pod. The problem with that is I'm not sure what I have to give up. In essence, this is an archetype that I'm looking forward to trying out this week in a number of forms. Sort of this, can I do something where when guys die, they go back to my hand, thus making it less necessary to play stuff that mitigates damage and instead just be able to replay them.
I think it's interesting. I think it's a very resource-dependent idea on that one. When you say, if you're playing, you spend four resources to get Luke out, and he only survives one or two turns, goes back to your hand, I mean, that's still another turn where you're not playing anything except for another Luke.
Yep, and that will be the question, is if I'm able to do enough other stuff to make this worth it. Because if you can just keep playing Luke, doing two damage and having him die, it's not a great turn, but that's something. You're able to kill stuff because he has targeted strike. It's really going to depend on how the deck shakes out. I mean, if Luke is dying every turn, then it's probably not going to be a great idea. But it's more the notion that I don't have to rely on protectors. I don't have to use them. This might be a way to get around using them.
Except that you would include them for other reasons in the deck.
If I want to have that way to protect the knowledge and defense objective itself. I'm hoping not to with a emergency repair and with the Daughters of Alia. I'm hoping that's going to be enough. It's probably not. There's a good chance this deck is going to be a terrible deck, but it's a deck that I want to try out this week. This week is definitely going to be, and this is how it works every time new packs come out, I play bad decks for about 2 weeks, praying that one of them will be a good deck and that I won't have to play the same old decks all the time.
You said the Eternal Optimist.
Oh yeah, that's me, the Eternal Optimist.
I see it every day.
And Protection is an amazing fate card. Being able to drop a shield on someone during the edge battle, that's just going to really help keep some of these guys alive, especially like Luke, longer than he would have before. It's going to mess with them. They think, okay, I'm going to block with this Tactics guy. I'm just going to win the edge. Tactics Luke. Wait, what? Luke has a shield now? Oh, that changes everything.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool. I really like it. And the thing I think I like most about this objective set is that fate card. The yep. idea that, you know, because you see a lot of fate cards in other objective sets, right? You don't just, it's not just, we only ever saw Twist of Fate in the core and that was it, right? We've already seen objective sets in these rounds of force packs that have Twist of Fate in it. And so the fact that the protection exists as a fate card and there will probably be a chance to see more protections in the future, you know, it just seems really exciting to me.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that card. The rest of the objective set, I'm not as sold on. Like I said, we're not going to review it this week. I'll try the rest of it out this week, and then we'll talk about it soon.
Woo, new cards.
So it's time for Card of the Week, and since it feels like every card has been the Card of the Week, we're going to choose cards that are from the new packs that we think are going to be interesting to play and maybe cards of the week. So I'm going to pick the FX7 Medical Assistant. He is a droid, 3 cost, 1 force icon, 2 damage capacity, 1 white tactics icon reaction. After this unit is focused to strike, remove 1 token, any type, from a target enhancement or character unit. So this dude is like the battlefield engineer on steroids and other supplements at the same time.
Maybe crack. I think normally the saying there is crack.
Okay, we can go with that.
He is the battlefield engineers on crack.
But he is ridiculous. He's a droid, so he can't be choked. That's a big, big plus. He can take off, say, like you attack with Luke, targeted strike somebody, then you strike with your medical assistant droid, remove the icon from Luke.
The
Luke
focus token.
Yeah, and in the meantime, you focus somebody. I mean, he just feels like he's going to be phenomenal on the upside. Downside, you have to attack with this dude and strike with him. And with only 2 damage capacity, it's going to be a little worrisome putting him into battles. He's immediately going to be a target. The nice thing is, though, if you have out, say, like Han or Luke, and then you have him out, if he's their target, you're pretty happy. That's less damage going on Han or Luke. The other downside, the Guardians of Peace cannot actually protect him because he's a droid.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of those cards I think that's going to be really key for your opponent to keep track of, because you can do like an attack, right, on an objective. And if they only have a certain number of unfocused units, they have to be aware that this guy can come in after the fact, attack another objective, clear whatever you want from anything, and then have the ability to, you know, you get to restrike with any of the units you've tried before. Like, it just is really, 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 really strong. You know, imagine this with Battlefield Engineers. You can be just removing focus from Echo Caverns like there's no tomorrow.
Yeah. Echo Caverns is going to be exploited in a lot of decks, I think, after this unit comes out.
You can really make it really, really unpleasant for your opponent.
Yeah. Like, it's not already unpleasant when you get Echo Caverns out.
Okay, so I'm going to pick a card also from the upcoming stuff, obviously. It's actually from the same objective set.
What?
I know, it's crazy. And this is a droid unit. It's WED 15-1016, which is going to be awesome to remember for those times where you have to name the card in your opponent's hand that you're looking for.
Is it the WED 16-1015? Do you have that one?
Nope,
no, I do not have that in my hand.
I think you messed that one up a little bit. It's a 1-cost, 2 health capacity, 1 force icon droid unit. It does not have any battle icons, but it does have the reaction. After you refresh, remove 1 token, any type, from a target Hoth objective. It just seems really strong. It's one of those things where you can double focus any. So, for example, based on the spoiling, this objective set, the objective has 3 resources that it generates. At the end of your refresh, you can use both, you know, use 2 of its resources and then refresh and clear it. I mean, like, you automatically get that. It's not like it's an elite objective or something like that. Like, you can clear the focus off that. You can take off damage off of objectives. You can use it against your opponent's Hoth objectives and take off shields that they might have put on there. I mean, it's just a very versatile, Hoth-centric, very fun in the kind of the synergy of the decks that are out there card. I'm pretty excited to play with.
Yeah, me too. I think it's going to be interesting. I mean, you can take it off your new Hoth objective for the smugglers that says if it's undamaged, it does something great. They put the 1 damage on it, and then you play this, and boop, no more damage on it.
Yep.
It's going to be pretty strong and pretty fun. Wanted to take this opportunity to let everyone know that the Smuggler's Den will be hosting the regionals to end all regionals. Since so many of the regionals were kind of small, and all the great players are spread out all over the country, we thought it would be a good idea to have a pre-Gen Con regional that we would host on Octagon. There will be more details to follow, but I'm shooting for a start date of around July 1st so that we can have a number of weeks before Gen Con to finish up this tournament. It's essentially going to be, you do 1 match a week. There's going to be probably 4 rounds of Swiss and then a cut to a top 8. So there will be prizes. There will be great players. I already have a number of regional winners lined up to play in the event. So if you want to test your skills against the best of the best and win the ultimate regional, come play in the Smuggler's Den tournament on Octagon. So stay tuned for more details to follow.
It sounds about that time, Tiny, where our listeners have wasted an entire hour and 15 minutes again listening to us ramble about this game.
Yep. It's hard to believe that every week we waste so much of your time. So our apologies. And until next time,
May the force be with you.